Hey, everybody. This is a special episode of the Established Facts presented to you. I am sitting in for our host, Mike, who is normally here. Unfortunately, he could not be with us for this recording, but I am going to get right to the nitty-gritty and do our group introductions, starting via satellite.
You know you're supposed
to
introduce.
And then
Mike normally says, "Then this is Derek," and I say, "Hey there." And I was waiting for that. And
sorry.
And you know, you just mess it up.
I'm
two
sorry.
2 minutes in, dude.
It's a new guy. Give him some breaks. We'll have to give him a few
breaks.
I've got breaks.
He has
on
to
my
learn
van.
The hard
That's
way.
All, yeah. Jump in feet first. All right, and then to my left,
Dr. Deb is here.
And to her left is me, Anton, Tony.
That's the most depressed something introduction
That's
ever.
It's a very depressed moo.
Well, this is Josh in the production booth. I still laugh that we describe where everybody's sitting, even though they can't see us.
Imagination. Have you not played role-playing games?
We have, but we could be telling you're sitting on top of the Eiffel Tower.
That's a great picture. Let's do that.
Okay. I think that's
that
illegal.
Yeah,
yeah. Probably.
And as your host, this is Don.
Yeah, he's the host.
Yeah, I'm the host. That's so weird.
He got promoted.
By the way, you owe Michael $10 now.
I owe him my $10. Why?
Because you called yourself the host. He kind of copyrighted that. Didn't you hear?
Oh. Yeah.
It's a poor man's copyright, though. That's why he only gets $10 instead of $30,000.
Okay, I am the assistant to the host, Mike. Okay.
Can we
move beyond this? Because this is getting awkward.
We're trying. We're trying. We here at the Established Facts are all very strong roleplay gamers, as we have discussed on several of our episodes. And kind of transitioning from some of the really cool series and opportunities that we have put out there with the Video Game Madness in our series involving roleplay alignments and how they're associated with characters and things like that. We're going to get back into our normal protocol or procedures for our podcasts. For those of you who have gotten the chance to listen, we want to thank again Mikey Mason for being on the Established Facts and recording with us. We had a great time, and we hope that he continues to have success in all of his shows, and we can't wait to see him at Gen Con.
Gen Con!
Yeah, most of us, I'm pretty sure most of us are going to definitely try and get to his show, which is on the 18th at 2 p.m. And does anybody remember what? I can't remember what hotel he's
in. He's going to be at the Crown Plaza Grand Ballroom.
Crown Plaza Grand Ballroom, 2 p.m. on August the 18th. So make sure you – and it's just a general admission ticket. So it's like
$2
a couple
or so.
Bucks.
$2.
Yeah, so,
yeah, $2.
So be there or, as they say, be square. So we're going to get right into our versus topic for this episode. Now, a huge part of the experience that you have as – a role-play gamer is where your campaign is set, where your adventure is going to unfold, and the landscape and all of the history of the landscape that you are associating yourself with for the game. So for our versus topic today, we're actually going to do a constructed campaign setting, so something like Forgotten Realms, or Eberron, or Dragonlance style, or
Star Wars.
Or Star Wars, exactly.
7C?
Versus an original world setting using the rules of whatever gaming system you are actually doing, similar to Palagame. So we're going to start again to my left with Deb and go around.
I am going to vote for original. So whether Palagane or another one of our GMs that we've had in the past has a world that she's created, I love playing inside of original worlds.
Everybody's looking at me, and I have no idea.
Fence-sitter.
Fence-sitter?
Yeah, I think I might actually be the fence-sitter for this one.
We got the fence-sitter back, people.
Come back to me.
Come back to you? Okay. Derek?
I'd have to say original setting.
Joshy?
Well, as a player, I definitely prefer to play in an original world. But as a game master, I prefer to run a already created world. Not meaning that I prefer original, because I actually were playing. I run inside Pelagane, but that is Derek's world. It's not my own. Just because I've yet to come up with that spark. So I tend to go towards original about 75%, but I wouldn't have a problem running outside of the actual, like Pathfinder, for example, running in the Pathfinder world. So I'm not per se on the fence. I'm ready to kick him off, but...
Tony, do you have an opinion yet?
For me, it's like, I look at Pelagane as an established world, as a campaign setting type world like 7Cs and the other type, because I wasn't there as it was created. And so for me, as somebody who really wasn't around when Derek was making this and really wasn't a part of it, it is to me truly one of the established worlds.
Like constructed
world.
Style. Okay.
Because, I mean, I wasn't around it. Like, but I was around as Dalva, or as Iota Dree was created.
If only D&D really existed.
And so that is, to me, an original world. So, I mean, I really am on both. I enjoy
okay.
both of them equally.
All right, well, you already know what we do to fence sitters, so I don't have to explain.
Well, that was a good explanation, though.
I would agree. I would also have to slightly agree with Josh on it can be easier as a game master, dungeon master, to run in a world that's already established and all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and you kind of know the back history of all the cities and things like that. But to be honest, there's something about being able to run in an undefined wilderness where you are actually putting the history of that world together. So I would have to say that I truly enjoy playing and running in more of an original world concept. I do agree with Tony's definition of, you know, when you kind of come in, you know, a little while after that campaign setting has been
established,
created and established, it feels like it's kind of a constructed campaign setting. So I could understand kind of looking at it in that perspective as well, though.
Well, I just have as a GM, I just have a difficult time trying to keep together all the canon in an established world. So it's like, oh my goodness, am I going to break canon here? Or am I going to break canon there?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to know everything about this city? There's a lot, I feel a lot more to worry about as a GM when you're running in an established campaign setting.
Well, and I can't disagree with you on that. But the interesting thing about that, it's a great part about playing a role-playing game, is you get somebody, for example, we're playing in John Pettit's game, another great listener, thank you again. In the Star Wars universe, a nice The Old Republic era, as a matter of fact, but he's allowing us to bend the rules, make changes outside of canon. For example, we have an Ewok, and anyone out there that's a Star Wars fan who seems to have a problem with that, just get over it. It's an open experience, and we really enjoy it, but it's because the Game Master's allowed us to open that up. And I think we've run into that situation, as a matter of fact, with Pelagane. I know that I am running inside of it, but you're also kind of giving me free will here, and we're working together to develop a history that wasn't there in the past. So the same types of things can happen, both in freely created versus constructed, as he called it, or established worlds. I mean, there's not a whole lot you could do to change the Underdark that Salvatore created with him and his drow. So I had to throw it in. There's not a whole lot you could change about it, but in Pelagane, there isn't an Underdark. It's a shadow plane where all the drow are from.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're allowing for creativity So I can see there's definite benefits to creating your own world, but the great part of it being a role player is you can modify it to make it work within your play style, your playing, you know, what you prefer.
I would also have to say that it seems to me in the times that I've run a game, I tend to like to if take the Underdark for example. So if you are living in an Underdark city that's maybe established in a Forgotten Realms campaign setting, and it has like a history unto itself and things like that, I like to sometimes put a little twist on it and say, oh well, my character is from a smaller unknown, you know, location that doesn't really have a defined history, or you know, kind of make it original to my own character, because there's something about being able to define yourself outside of the realm of where you're from, and I think that as a GM and as a player, I tend to kind of do that anyway. Like even if I'm working in an established setting, trying to find a little bit of originality in that setting, being able to kind of open the doors to, oh yeah, well, you know, I live in the small hamlet 100 miles northeast of Greyhawk, or something, you know, something like something that's just way out there, that you can kind of make your own rules and oh well, that's not how we did it in our city. Well, you know, because I think there's something about somebody who knows a little too much about a specific city or a specific location that really kind of gets you into like a rules lawyer. Well, that you would never find that here, and I understand like in Palagane it's a little bit different for us because obviously Derek, it's your world, and so right. there are certain elements that don't exist or that do exist in a different way, and so it's nice to kind of, I think it's really cool to be able to work in an original world with the developer as it's developing.
Oh yeah, no,
right.
I agree. An example of what you were talking about as far as expanding on an existing canon, so to speak. When I was working in Greyhawk and I was writing for Living Greyhawk, there was a region where I created a module, and I created this own little ecosystem, this whole town, village, series of villages, and they allowed me to do it, and it was officially sponsored by WotC, so it was sort of kind of cool that I got to play in their playground and change a couple of things. I think as a world creator, you have to allow a lot of space for people to develop civilizations, their own rules, that sort of thing. There obviously has to be an overarching theme and overarching rules to make Palagane a whole, but I think the details can come up to the individual GMs and so forth.
Debbie, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to put in that this is sort of a weird versus topic for me, and the reason is because I've had a weird gaming adolescence in that I don't recall... Okay, yes, that's not really true. I've had very few experiences where I actually have been played in a established world, because I came in... initially, I played a little bit in the other world we've mentioned, Iota Dree. And then for the majority of my gaming life, I played in Palagane. So Palagane is home to me in the term of role-playing, because that's where I really started getting comfortable and really started having fun with it. So it's sort of, even though I'm most comfortable in Derek's world and in Iota Dree, there's a strong curiosity of wanting to play in Greyhawk, of wanting to play in, you know, Forgotten Realms, because I haven't played in any of those, because just the exposure and the GMs that I've had, I just haven't had the opportunity to do that. So if any of you lovely gentlemen sitting here, or any of you out there in our listening world would want to run one of these campaigns, I'd be really interested in doing it, because as much as I love Palagane, I love Palagane. I'll play in it as long as Derek says it exists. But I'd love to start playing in some of the other realms. We had the opportunity to do that at Gen Con when we played the one game done by our buddies. Was it down in Evansville? And playing in their world. That was also, would you guys define that as a created world? Or would you call that an established world?
They created it.
Okay.
But yeah. It is, it's the Realms of Twilight by Silver Crescent Publishing. Mm-hmm. Look them up. Daniel Marshall on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And they've created a world that almost reminds us of the Underdark of sorts. It's a very dark world. They've created it themselves, but I'd almost say that the difference between established versus not established is major company sponsored. For example, the Realms of Twilight is a Pathfinder role-playing game compatible world, mm-hmm. But it is not a Pathfinder rule. It is not the... The world known, I cannot remember what Paizo's world is because we haven't played in it yet. So they, of course, have that. It's not the Wizards of the Coast's Eberron. They're not sponsored by the game developers themselves. That's almost where I would lean towards being an established. However, they do have a full rule book out. Derek and Pelagane is going to have one out eventually. Now, granted, Iota Dree does not, because most of it is stuck in Danielle's head as it is. Mm-hmm. So hopefully she'll put that down. Hint, hint, if you actually listen. But I can see what you mean, because if it a really well put together original world can feel like an established or constructed world that's sponsored, whether it is or whether it's not.
Right.
You've played Star Wars.
I have, but with all the creativity that we put into it, which I'm not knocking, mind you. I think we have way too much fun sometimes in that game. But we do break canon because your character Chupa, Ewoks, as far as we know, but of course then we get into the creativity. But if you knew the rest of the story, Ewoks were not in the Knights of the Old Republic time frame. So he's allowed us to kind of come off on that, which I think is great. We have so much fun with it. Our game would not be our game without Chupa. But that's already, he gives us the freedom. If he wanted to be a real rules lawyer, he could have been really adamant and been like, no, there, you know, no one can play an Ewok in this because they don't, you know, we haven't discovered him yet, period. And he could have been really difficult about it. And he wasn't. He was very open. So that's my thinking. Yes, you are correct, though, that there is a lot of history in Star Wars. And when you play my other group of friends, you met, you know, Nick, Nathaniel, Chris, right. They play very, you know, this is Star Wars canon, and they're all very versed in Star Wars canon, and that's, yeah. I told him you were playing an Ewok, and he flipped, because he's like, what? Ewoks don't exist. It's like, well, yeah, of course they exist, but you just didn't know the rest of the story, because you never met Chupa. You know, I kind of teased it off like that. And, yeah. And you know, any kind of joke, but he was just like, you know, Nathaniel would never have approved. He never let us run like that. I was like, well, John does. So, and so that kind of a thing.
So you want to play a canon setting. You want to follow the canon.
Yes, I'd like one chance to be able to follow within canon. And my example of this, and you may have never played it before, Josh played a video game that was based off of the Lord of the Rings story. But what it was is it was a different party. What was it called, sweetie? You played it years ago.
It was the Third Age. Yes. The name of it.
Okay, so Lord of the Rings, the Third Age. And it was another party that was made up of Neil and Elf, a dwarf, a human. And they were off doing stuff, but it was always with the canon story of the Lord of the Rings. So when something was happening with them, you know, now is the Battle of Mordor, or now is the Battle of Helm's Deep. And so the canon always stayed the same, and you were just doing some things kind of off the beaten path. But it was never, you know, well, the Battle of Mordor never really happened. They didn't break canon like that. And so that kind of an idea would be fun to me. Or you're in the Battle of Mordor, you're just off over here in this corner somewhere, and you're not actually Aragorn.
Then I would suggest Pathfinder Society.
Okay. And that's something I've considered. I just, obviously, with my completely free schedule, I've had so much time to do that. But, yeah, I would be very interested in trying that out, just because that's a different flavor. And
well, you can't role play around a person that you're in surgery with?
No, we try to avoid that. And typically the patient appreciates it when we avoid that, too.
Oh, jeez, I lost my D20 in the cavity.
Exactly.
Shirts were on the lungs.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, you get to stick your finger down there and find that D4 that you just decided to misroll. Awesome.
That would look cantrip in my chest.
That would look interesting on an X-ray.
Oh, it would be quite.
You rolled max damage.
Sweet, look, yeah. It's a 20.
For those of you looking for the information, the world of Pathfinder is Galorian, and the most recent thing to be released is the Inner Sea. That is the one where a lot of the gaming is occurring right now. So it is the world of Galorian. Now, Paizo can know we mentioned it by name.
And I'd be interested, as I said, I'd be interested in playing it now. You know, when we're going to have time to actually play it. It's going to go on my list of things to do, but
I'm thinking of a campaign.
Depending on when this gets released, you can probably play it at Fear the Con.
Okay.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, that's true.
I can think of a campaign setting that I know Debbie would love to play in.
Uh-oh.
Ravenloft.
Yes. Now, Derek is running a variant of Ravenloft, is what I'm calling it, because it's Ravenloft within Palagain. Is that and it's your own twist on it?
Yeah, I deconstructed Ravenloft, and I'm running that.
Ravenloft is scary enough.
Yeah.
Before Derek,
but to be in
classic Ravenloft that I've heard so many stories about, you know, like Vorn going catatonic, you know, all these kind of stories you hear about it. It would be fun to play, and maybe even going through it kind of quickly, but a classic Ravenloft game, just so I can, because I feel a little left out, because you all have experienced that classic, you know, Strahd.
Hatred of Duchy Lords.
No, exactly. We've had a lot of the names, a lot of the words, a lot of it name dropped. I can't tell you for sure. I have zero experience. I'm pretty sure Don does too. We have never actually run the expedition to Castle Ravenloft written by Tracy Hickman from Second Edition. I have never actually done it. That's where it started.
We have played in the setting of that. We have not actually played like the modulated.
It was
the module of.
Well, the 3.5 expedition that was released, that is more legitimate to the original Ravenloft. What Danielle and John ran was Ravenloft in Iota Dree.
Right.
Yeah.
So
Setting of Ravenloft.
I'm talking about the game that like Mike started. In, you know, the expedition to Castle Ravenloft, and we were never really able to finish it well.
That is the legitimate Ravenloft setting.
That's what I would like to finish. I think I'm just having kind of this, you know, sad...
Another game.
Well, then at some point we'll have to run that for you, Deb.
Okay.
Another game that you are playing that is in holding with canon is the 7C game.
Mm. Yes.
That's true.
That is true. Which I'm having a lot of fun with. The one time I played, I had a lot of fun with it. So, yeah.
After you guys move.
Yes. Please. Anyway, so sorry. That's my thought. I kind of rambled.
No, it's cool.
That's what we do these for.
And to pick up from like what I was saying earlier about why I'm on the fence is because it really depends on, like Josh was saying, what side of the coin you're on. Mm-hmm. Because it's very much so as a player in these games, you feel like the realm is established a lot of times, even if it's a uniquely created realm.
Right.
It all depends on the preparation of the DM. And because like Iota Dree is a very much created realm, but it still very much most of the time felt like an established area. It felt like an established campaign setting because she knew exactly where things were and what was going on. Now, we threw her loops, but that's what players are supposed to do. But I've played in 7C, and in running in from a player aspect, it does not feel any different to me playing in Iota Dree or any of the other ones that we've created versus playing in 7C or playing in the others. Because it very much depends on the preparation of the DM.
I wonder if our gaming group is... different spoiled? Than most. in that we tend to create our own worlds, like Danielle or like myself and so forth.
You know, I don't think it is because I mean, for as it got brought up, Silver Crescent, they did the same thing. They're like, you know, we see this is available, we'd like to do more. So they turn, and after a bunch of different gaming aspects, that's how that's created. The Dragonlance series was because Margaret Weiss, Tracy Hickman, all those guys wanted something different, so they created their own world. I think it's more common, but it's not as known, maybe.
Well, I think that something in addition to that is kind of a funny, humorous paradox, is that it seems like eventually the really good original campaign settings become established campaign settings,
exactly.
Like Dragonlance.
Yep.
You know, that's a perfect parallel for that. You know, something that people put together because they wanted something that was a little bit outside of what they had already found. They wanted to kind of put their own spin on it. They didn't necessarily want to be dictated by the specific history of wherever they had started playing. They wanted something that was more attuned to being affected by what they were doing as heroes in that world versus what someone else had already done. And it's just kind of a cool paradox to see, you know, how it's transitioned from something that was completely an original work to something that is now something that I would consider to be, you know, a very established campaign setting in general.
Yeah, and plus it also a lot of times like that I see is you'll create unique on top of established.
Right.
Like with me wanting to do Ruok Ren with Palygane.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's just sure. I mean it all depends on how you there again, it all depends on how your DM wants to play.
Right.
So because I mean like just like you were saying, you can very much change a storyline while still holding canon. By going off on some tangent.
Right.
So.
A question that I have that kind of adds to our discussion is when using a campaign setting that may already be established, or I guess you could use it in an original campaign setting as well, especially if you have the originator of that campaign setting, how into detail do you as a character or you as a GM want to get for that world? Like if there is, you know, if there was an insurrection in whatever year of the world, you know, how much of that do you actually want to dictate what you are going to do? Or do you like to have just free roam to pretty much define yourselves without being affected by
the
that?
Lore, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I honestly, it's nice to have some lore, because then it does give a base. But I don't think, like, for most part, I think you don't want to get overburdened by the lore, because then it just becomes about the lore and not about the game. Now, I can see you having, like, a archaeological or historical type, like, adventure inside right. this that you're hunting and searching for something of the past, and then that would be about the lore. But if you're going after some bad guy, sure, having the knowledge of what's happened here may be beneficial for the future, but it's can be detrimental if it's too much.
I was just thinking about we were using 7C as a little bit of an example, and I know that the current 7C game that we are playing is based around the timeline of what would be Robin Goodfellow or Robin Hood, depending on if you have gotten a chance to actually play 7C or not. But I know that this game is eventually, it's basically kind of a warm-up game for a larger game that we're going to be involved in soon that is going to take place around the Montane Revolution, also known as the French Revolution
history.
Know, in world history. So to me, I feel like as a player, I would hate I would hate for my actions to have to fall in line and be dictated by the actual
history
of that event. I mean, I understand that there, and kind of like Debbie, what you were talking about with the Lord of the Rings game, it's like these things are going on, mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily. I mean, obviously, your game is going to be affected by what is happening, but I don't want that to have to dictate my every move. You know, I would rather, similar to, if you're going to use a Lord of the Rings video game parallel, similar to like War of the North, the newest Lord of the Rings game, it happens after the fall of
Mordor.
Sauron, and it happens with a party of a dwarf, a human, and an elf, but it's in the northern lands where Saruman has fled, or his forces have fled, and it's kind of like the second part of that war, you know, and kind of expounding on that.
Yeah, I do concur with you that it would be detrimental to the game for Earth history to completely dictate the future of the game. So,
what about you, Derek?
I've actually tried to stay out of this conversation because I'm a little bit biased because I am creating a world, so it's like, while I can understand why you want to not have world events influence you, I think that that if you're playing in a campaign setting, that you should be aware of what's happening around you.
And I completely agree
with you. I agree with that. I think kind of putting it in perspective for what we are currently doing as a group in our Destruction of Xenopolis game, there are specific events that are going to happen inevitably. I think that what I, as a player, want to feel is that though I am affecting the world of that specific game, you know, or Xenopolis as it is falling apart and being destroyed, I feel like there is definitely, and especially as a GM, you know, who has run games before in modules and in original campaign settings and things like that, I know that there is a point in which the DM has to say, okay, look, this is happening. You know, this is what is happening right now. You have to respond to that.
But don't you feel cheated about that?
I mean, a little bit, but I think that in the sense of, even though, you know, obviously as a gamer, you're using role-play games to kind of escape reality, even in reality, there are specific things that are going to happen that you can't stop. You just have to kind of roll with the punches. And I think that I just want to know that my reality is just as real as what else is going on. And even though I'm being affected by, you know, in the 7C campaign, even though my character is going to be affected by the Montane Revolution, I want to know that my story is another story in addition to the main storyline that is going on.
The way I interpreted the question, maybe I interpreted it incorrectly, was making the decision on how you make your character based off what you know about the game going on. And maybe it is that idea of metagaming. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I try not to. For example, I knew with the tower game that we're playing with you, Derek, that we were going to have to deal with Nemesis. And even now, as the game master of Xenopolis, now that I know the, you know, how things go together, I am not planning on letting that affect the character selection I made and the character itself. I am not the one who has the Nemesis issue. Michael's character does. But he has caused me problems, therefore I'm going to go deal with it. I chose to play a rogue because, for one, the party needed one, and number two, I have not really got the opportunity to sit down and play the rogue itself. My hope is that as the story unfolds, whether it be because it has to or because we caused it, that my rogue can go with that and make his story just as crucial as the stuff going around as well.
But what I get back to is, and we're talking a little bit about Deus Ex Machina here, where certain things, quote-unquote, have to happen. Does that take away from your enjoyment of the game?
No.
To me, it doesn't, because that's the story.
So. It's part of the story. It's more of the amount of stuff that happens that dictates where the game goes than it is the Like, basically from what I'm getting at is, like, yes, there are things in games that have to happen. Otherwise, you never drive the plot line. Period.
Right.
So, but it's all about how much of the events are completely dictating what you're doing. If five games in a row, you're dealing with a different event each time, completely dictating what you're doing for that event, for that game, that kind of...
Yeah, it can get a little monotonous.
It falls back to the previous part about railroading.
Yeah.
Or about how a game is either driven by railroad or not. Yeah. And if your entire game is railroaded, you feel like you're not in control of your character.
I think also in building off of that concept of railroading, I think it's also important for a GM to make it feel like, look, even though there are things that are going on that you are having to deal with that may be outside of the realm of your control, I think it's definitely an important part of a game master's job to make it feel like a unique experience for the players at the table. I think that regardless whether or not you have to deal with what's going on, I can think of in the Red Hand of Doom campaign for Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. Yep. In the beginning, and I actually ran this module about halfway through, and then kind of transitioned into my own stuff. But in the module, there is a specific schedule, and as a dungeon master, it recommends that if you were going to run the whole campaign, that you need to continue to press the drama with your party and let them know this is an urgent matter that you need to continue to deal with. And based on how long it takes your party to respond and effectively complete whatever objective you might have in front of you, there are certain things that are going to happen that may not be the greatest things in the world. You may have special characters or NPCs that may, in the beginning of the game, may hold a huge significance to the actual game. They could die. They could be assassinated. They could be killed, depending on how long it takes your party to make a decision and execute that decision. And that's kind of the perspective that I was taking of that kind of thing is like, that's going to happen. You know, if it takes my party a week to execute something that may take the book 3 days, I have to deal with whatever happens and then just keep going. Because I have to know as a player that whatever I'm doing is still positively moving towards the solution or the accomplishment that I want to eventually gain.
Deb, you look like you had something to say.
Yes, I'm trying to figure out if it works with this topic or if it's actually a future either versus topic or discussion topic. And what I was thinking is that because I've had so many conversations with Derek, for example, about Palagain, there's are a lot of times when I wonder if in the game I'm actually metagaming. Not intentionally, but because I know the direction this is going. I've heard the conversation. I know Xenopolis is going to be... I know that. I played a future campaign where it's a big crater. So I know that. And so therefore, unconsciously, are some of my decisions being driven because I know where we're going. And I just was wondering if is it a better gaming experience when the players don't necessarily know where they're going? Kind of like what Mikey Mason said, what's comedy? It's when people think they're going one place and all of a sudden it's, nope, we're not ending up there at all. And this isn't something that really I do because I don't run games, but as an idea of what if, as a player, I honestly think that we're going to end up with Xenopolis as a crater. That's what I think. But somewhere between Josh and Derek, you know, Derek's world and Josh is running it, actually they'll say, well, actually you think this is going to be the end, but actually Xenopolis is not going to be destroyed this way, for example. Xenopolis is going to be thriving at the end of this game, and you're going to be going, huh, well, I ended up somewhere I didn't know I was going to end up. And so because of that, now I'm getting way too psychological. But the question, I guess, is if you're playing in a game where you kind of know where you're going to end up anyway, you know, at the end of Lord of the Rings, you know that, you know, Sauron's going to, you know, be gone and you know that.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of spoiler alerts.
I'm sorry, like Mikey Mason said, that movie has been out more than enough years now. It is no longer a spoiler. Yeah.
And the book is how old?
Yeah, seriously. But
get a clue.
So I was sitting here thinking, like, am I actually metagaming? you know, in a couple of your games, because I've played various time plots and I know what happened before because I learned some of the lore, and now I'm playing in that where that lore is being created. Is that as enjoyable experience as if the DM decided to surprise me with something of, hey, by the way, you know, here. And it's like, well, wait a minute, I played in a future game. I never heard any of that mentioned. Well, no, because it was super, super information that only the Masons knew, and the Masons didn't reveal it to anybody, but in reality.
That's because we don't.
Exactly. But, and so I think that might actually be a bigger topic of metagaming and the dangers or maybe the advantages of metagaming, whether intentionally or not. You know, some people do it intentionally, but my subconscious always knows these things about the story. And so I'm playing whether I want to or not with that kind of affecting how I play. So, and I know that's,
A good topic for future. But,
yeah, I know. And sorry, I just.
Definitely.
But no, don't be sorry. But I mean, on this topic, I mean, you're saying something like, okay, well, do I enjoy knowing about the lore of the campaign setting? And I mean, that's one of the risks, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, mm-hmm. of playing in an established campaign setting.
Right.
Yeah, because you do know.
There's a very strong possibility you know the lore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's up to the GM to really make it surprising for make the storyline.
I completely agree.
Surprising.
Yes,
I totally agree with that. Kind of moving into our, we had some really good discussions for our versus topic, but moving into a little bit more of our general discussion. Again, we're going to continue with the theme of role playing games and characters and how they're affected by we can say lore or past. Our discussion topic for this episode today is when you create a character, regardless what kind of character it is, when you create a character, do you like to use original parts? So like things that, you know, concepts for characters that you have never done, or do you tend to shoot for more familiarity with a favorite class, or maybe you're trying to piece back together an old character from a campaign that you have run with, you know, but haven't touched in a very long time. So,
well, I can say that I like to try and play original characters if it's an option. I know that I've run into cases, a couple of games with Derek where we had no spellcasters, or at least none that were stable as it may be. So I would play a spellcaster, and I never really had a lot of experience playing a spellcaster, but I went ahead and played one nonetheless. But in the current tower game, I play a rogue. I this Fane Shadowfell, as you can find in Derek's primer. What in the world is the name of that? Came the Heroes Love Song.
Heroes Love Song.
Heroes Love Song can be found on Paizo.com or at PelaganeProject.com. Correct.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Fantastic. Fane Shadowfell was purely just this idea that I wanted to see what the drow. What it would be like to be a drow in the world of Palagame, because we haven't run into that yet. We wanted to kind of flesh out that the Underdark elf, as it may be called. And I never played the rogue. And it's been a really cool route to go, because you're developing this backstory and everything that has to go behind it. Where that's a definite bonus that role-playing gives me. So I tend to prefer to run on the original standing, because that's fun to me. You know, I've played repetitive characters. I've played the same types of characters over and over. Heck, I'm even playing in a Castle Ravenloft game with another party, or at least I've played one game so far where I'm playing a fighter who's from a different time period, who was a part of the English Crusades, because I thought it would be interesting twist, since the thing about Ravenloft being another plane is you are from different areas, and everyone just kind of gets slammed into the Ravenloft, and it's like, this is what you have to deal with, no matter where you're from, what timeline, what world. So, but I've played fighters before. I've played the same type of fighter, a fighter who's got a shield and a big sword and a bunch of armor, and, you know, I'm the big BDF, but I made it original by giving it a storyline.
Way to save the host.
Yeah. I would have to say, personally, when I create a character, I like to come up with a new twist every time. However, I am definitely guilty of kind of using old inspiration for characters and then kind of turning them, you know, upside down or on their cheek. I can think of I played the second character I ever played in Dungeons and Dragons was an elven rogue, and I had such a good time playing an elven rogue that I really fell in love with that class. And as pretty much anybody on this panel can tell you, maybe short of Derek,
he's prone.
Yeah, I really try to limit myself on how many times I play a character that's only a few degrees different than one that I have previously played. But unfortunately, inevitably, it happens.
He's
I'm definitely guilty of using a lot of previous character concepts and maybe just kind of changing them a little bit. For example, in the Destruction of Xenopolis, I am playing a drow rogue, which happens to be my favorite class and my favorite race of character until, of course, the Ultimate Race Book comes out, and then it may be different.
Drow rogue.
But, a drow rogue.
A drow rogue.
Rogue. Rogue. A drow rogue. horrible. So I'm, other than being guilty of that, I think that knowing that about myself, I also try and consciously for new games with new GMs and things like that, I try and play something that's a little bit different than what I have used before. It's not always easy. It's not always easy because I fall in love with my characters so quick. It's a good thing I'm married because, I'm that kind of guy. But it's just easy for me to really get into the characters that I create because I have so much fun coming up with character concepts. And I don't know if you guys do this, but when I see a really funny character or something that I see on, like, TV or a movie, it's always fun for me to try and see how I can make that guy in my next game. One character right. I can... What's that?
So I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. One character I can think of right off the top of my head is if you ever watched the original Hercules series with Kevin Sorbo in it, there was a character that Bruce Campbell played. He was the King of Thieves, and he was Italicus. And several times I have contemplated putting a character together that was basically him. But it's, I think the hardest part about it is it's not easy to run a character that obviously is already established in, you know, something like that because...
Oh, that, there's only one Bruce Campbell.
Well, that's true. That's true.
There can only be one.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a game based on that? Wasn't there the established, or the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen game? I want to say there was. Basically, almost of the characters were created out of TV and...
Oh, there's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie.
No, I know that, but
it has like characters from.
But I'm going to say that there was a game that was that style that we pulled them out of TV and film and stuff like that. That all our characters were based on. I want to say we played a game like that once.
I don't know. Sounds like a fun game to play if we haven't.
The way that I approach characters is that I come up with a concept of the character. And then I let it grow organically throughout the game, throughout the storyline. That's what happened with Dongak. That's what happened with Chupa. I mean, Chupa originally was a bit player in Star Wars. And a couple sessions in, I wasn't even sure that I was going to continue on with the game. Just because I wasn't really connecting with Chupa. Until he went to the psychiatrist and I could change his personality. So I mean, with Dongak is a D&D character, and throughout the course of Living Greyhawk, I mean, he became like part fey, part dwarf. He had like five different classes, but the core of him was a lovable oaf that love children, that would drop everything and protect a child if they were in danger. And he kept that core with him, even with the insane muttness that he became. But ultimately, that's how I like to develop characters, is to give them a start and then just see where it goes.
I can agree with that.
Debbie, how about yourself? Do you have an opinion?
I think I do. I find myself similar to Don in his innate infatuation. That's not a word.
Insaturate. Butcher it.
Yeah, thank you.
You're going to screw it up. Butcher it.
I totally did. I meant to say infatuation. I have no idea where that came from. Wow.
What are you trying to say?
That you have a deep kind of well-hidden, okay, not hidden, man love for rogues, is what I'm saying.
A bromance.
Yes,
rogues.
You do. In that case, I have a, I don't know, is it a girlmance? What is that? I don't know.
Something.
A lady-mance. Wow.
Who cares? All the men want to hear about it anyway.
Exactly. Right. The class of cleric, which everyone who's listened knows that already. So it's very easy for me to fall back into just building variations on clerics. But in a bigger picture, I build my characters, for better or for worse, I build mine to play them for the long haul. It's very hard for me to sit down and just slap a character together. I tend to think hard and think long about what is important to this character, what's driving this character, what characteristics would they have that would make them interesting to play for a long time. And that's been a problem, only in that I've built some characters that I really, really liked and I think are really fun, and I've still got their character sheets, but I only played them for a time or two, and then I've never played them since, and they're gathering dust. So whether that's a bad thing or a good thing that I put so much thought into my characters, I don't know. I think it's both. I've kind of been a little heartbroken because there have been a couple that I really wanted to play, and as I said, it was they had kind of short lifespans. But the ones that I have played...
I think it's really good, Deb. If a campaign gets off to a good start, and I think we're at a point now where we have a solid enough group that we can play at least a number of game sessions before we get distracted.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you want a character that you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to play. I think you're erring on the right side of it.
Yeah. And so I was kind of trying to answer Don's question of, you know, would you put together old characters, you know, pieces of old characters? And I don't think I do that. I don't think I take pieces. I think I try to make each character distinct to themselves. But I think what I would like to do is pull some characters out that never really got a chance to live on their own. And I think I would do that and bring them back and say, okay, well, here's really their story to be able to play them. I think that would be very enjoyable. But I don't think I take bits and pieces, because to me, Lindariel is Lindariel, and you know, Tatiana was Tatiana, and to me, they're distinct entities to themselves. And if they each all showed up and you had me do like a three-way conversation between the three, I think I could actually do that. It wouldn't be like they were three variants, like, oh, this is all just the same person. No, I don't build characters like that.
So what you're saying,
I'd like
is
to see you try a character that isn't as intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think all your characters do have that common thread.
BDF.
Yes. Tatiana was a little more, but she was still a bard, so she still had the bardic knowledge, and she still had that kind of street smarts. You know, she was chaotic neutral, so she wasn't as straight-laced as some of the other ones I played, but even Tatiana was a bard and does the brainiac thing. So
Deb playing a fighter, that would be scary.
Well, I did play Lara. Awesome. I played the swashbuckler, but then you guys got too intellectual with the rest of the party, and Lara got annoyed with you all because we weren't doing enough fighting, too much talking. And so I ended up putting Tatiana instead. And so that was because I felt like Lara wasn't really being used to who she was, which was swashbuckler, fighter, rogue. So I'll bring Lara back. So, she was fun.
So what I've gotten out of this is, mm-hmm, Deb has multiple personality disorder.
She is just fine, and the rest of them come along for the ride.
True.
So, but you are correct, Derek, that I do tend to err toward intellectual because it's I'm intellectual myself, so I think I infuse myself into that. But just go and play a big, dumb orc barbarian. Maybe that's what I need to do one day.
I think that would be a good, I think that would be a good experiment for you. I think, because I can tell you, because a lot of my characters are intellectuals, but Dongak wasn't.
Interesting.
He certainly did not start off as intellectual. I gave myself an out in saying that his first language was Draconic, and he was having a trouble. He was having trouble translating to Common, but
right.
But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun just letting things flow and not having to have the answer to everything.
Yeah.
And then saying, oh, well, do you need that lock open? Okay, let me use my axe and open it.
Exactly. Right. Whereas opposed to, okay, well, let me try to figure out what the mechanism is, which, you know, my more intellectual characters would do. Yeah, I agree. So I think that's something I need to enjoy. But as for how I like to build, I build with a great deal of thought, and I build with a great deal of planning. I think that's just my personality, and it's what I veer toward.
So I only got like a couple minutes now.
Yep,
you're good. Sorry. Go for it.
Which is perfect.
Aww. I hate you.
And honestly, one of the characters I really only have three main characters that I've really truly enjoyed. I mean, I have played multiple characters, but none of them really sink in like. But these few, one of them was doomed from the start. One of them I played for 5 years. And one of them disappeared 1 year. the one that was doomed from the start was Danielle's. It was a created class, the Sunrunner.
Ugh.
It was phenomenal concept.
Good
to play.
Concept.
It was a phenomenal concept to play.
Practicality, poor.
It would have been phenomenal if it had been thought out before it was played.
You do know. Never mind.
Yeah. Like if it had a level progression?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before it was ever played. And honestly, you can't really get that truly until you start playing it and tweaking it, but fine. But something. I didn't have anything. Then there was P, which I played for 5 years, which I still to this day love that character. And I still use parts and pieces of that style with, like, because he was my first Scion, and he was the Scion that I used a lot. But he wasn't an attacking Scion; he was a Nomad Scion. He used all his Scion abilities to move him around, because if you got too close to him, he was getting away from you. And then
he shot you with a bow from like 700 miles away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I completely wrecked your face from the other side of the mountain.
Yeah.
And then the third character just kind of disappeared 1 year when Derek decided to change campaign games and campaign settings, or not settings, but
systems, role playing
systems. Thank you. And the character couldn't exist anymore because I had my Dragonborn Dragonborn of Bahamut, and I can't have that in Pathfinder.
Well,
so,
not yet.
Yeah, that'll get.
Well, Bahamut is a. Is a WotC thing.
Right, but right. Still.
Yeah.
Is there a Pathfinder equivalent? Probably not
no,
yet.
No, there's not.
No.
So, my third character was taken away from me. My first character was doomed from the start. And my second one just kind of...
Yeah.
Well, you
see, now
it.
I understand why you opened up so depressingly, because, I mean, this is like hate on Tony.
We need some, like, psychotherapy, I think.
And I haven't played a game since Gen Con.
Hmm. Wow.
Because I don't get invited to games anymore.
Josh, this is the cue for the music.
Yes.
In the background.
Yeah, right. We're just going to move on.
Well, we are reaching the end of our time together. We thank you all for allowing us to suck away another hour of your life that you will never be able to regain. And in all honesty, we do love and appreciate everybody who leaves us comments and listens to our podcasts and things like that. We continue to encourage you to get on our Facebook group page. The Established Facts Facebook group, and leave us comments, leave us ideas for versus topics. If there's something that you want us to talk about or discuss that we haven't yet, by all means, we know that there is a wealth of ideas and inspiration out there. We're just we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, and we just encourage you guys to also check out our merchandise shop on
cafepress.com/castingrobot.
Insert plug.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's definitely going to become your part from now on, Josh, at the end.
Yeah. Oh, cafepress.com/castingrobot. cafepress.com/castingrobot.
Oh, my Lord.
Our prices are insane.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa!
And,
oh, wow.
And, really? Yeah, and hopefully...
you married him.
I know.
Hopefully, we will have some really cool stuff coming up within the next couple months for you. Maybe even a couple bonus episodes if you are into that kind of thing. So, other
way
than
to
that,
sell it.
Oh, yeah, right.
yeah.
If you're into that,
not my job. Not my job.
Not. Oh no, huh?
I'm the substitute teacher. He didn't leave me a curriculum. You have no homework. Don't cry.
It's not your job. You're the person in charge of marketing.
Oh well, that's different. That's different.
How is that not?
In June we will probably. Well, no, in June we're going to be starting a really cool contest. So we want every one of you to make sure that you listen to our podcasts. We'll have the rules and everything up there. There are prizes. Swag is involved. Tradition to our normal host, I do have a new established fact for this episode.
Drum roll.
Now, I want to apologize that I do not remember the last one.
If you're going to say something and don't know how to say it, you might as well butcher it.
Okay, there we go.
And then there was Mikey's.
Which
and
probably
then, and
means
then Mikey Mason had one.
I probably just butchered it. Yeah. Yep. Mikey Mason, on
Mikey
the other
Mason's
said,
was
Fear, the,
Fear
con.
The Con is definitely the
best
two gays in daming.
Yes, the two yeah. gays in daming.
And today we have established original or established world, Lady Mance or Bromance. Your game is only as good as your vocabulary.
Nice.
Oh, goodness.
See ya.
Cheers.
Thank
you all. See y'all. Bye.